2019 filled Dealey Plaza with protesters and signs and singing and speaking, and let them bring their dogs and their cops and their robbers and murderers and their sniper rifles and double secret video cameras and microphones. Occupy Dealey Plaza. We demand a truth commission to replace the Warren Commission and the 9/11 Commission. We want freedom. We want peace. We want real hope and real change. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let them know we know what they have done. Occupy Dealey Plaza. Let the world know this is America.
And now we'd like to welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show, Ole Damigor. He's appeared on the show a couple of times, but this is the first of his official monthly columns, and I've asked him to start us off with a little background. Ole, take it away.
Well, first of all, like you say, my name is Ole Damigord, and I'm a prize-winning author and investigator since almost 30 years, where I'm mainly focused on assassinations and conspiracy on a global scale. Mainly John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, but also things like Oklahoma City, 9/11, and so on. And I found very, very strong evidence for proving that all of these events and many more are very linked, extremely linked, and even carried out by the same assassins many times. But to give a background, I was born in Denmark in the late 1950s, and I grew up in a family that was very active during the Second World War against the German occupation. My granddad was in jail for helping Jews, smuggling Jews to Sweden. My dad was in the resistance movement. My grandmother and her sister was smuggling weapons in baby cots and so on. So I grew up with all of these stories about the resistance and how to stand up for what is right and just. And so even though the odds are against you, even though you might feel very small and insignificant, and the enemy really big and powerful, but still you should do the right thing. So I grew up with that in my genes. I think that even if it feels like a David and Goliath battle, you still have to do it, even though it looks and feels very scary at times. Then when I was a kid, we moved to Sweden, and I grew up there out in the forest. And when I was in my early 20s, I started working as a journalist on a local newspaper down there, where one of the things I learned was that the things that we're being fed are not often, not always the truth, especially when it comes from the government and different official organizations and so on, that it's very important to look into all the details when you're given a story or if you're looking into a story before you accept it as being the truth. This thing with conspiracy, for me, it started in the early 1980s where I think it was the first time I saw the so-called Zapruder film. For those of your listeners who are not aware of the Zapruder film, it was a film taken by a bystander, an elderly man by the name of Abraham Zapruder, that was filming the motorcade in Dealey Plaza when the president, JFK, was assassinated. And in this film, even though it's low quality, it's very, very obvious that the final headshot that really blew half of the head of the president to smithereens came from the front and to the right, not like the official story said, from the sniper's nest at the back and to the right. When you see how the impact of the head, that he's being thrown backwards and to the left, meaning, according to simple physics, that the shooter was standing in front of the vehicle to the right, somewhere up there. So I got quite shocked when I saw that, because I felt, oh my God, if this is true, then the official story that we've been fed for so many years, it's an absolute lie. So I started digging into this, trying to, for my own sake, just trying to understand what had happened. And I read, I think, more or less 100, 200 books, I don't know how many books, and about this assassination. And one of the things that I found out was that it was very confusing to start with, because the same person in one book could be working for the CIA. In another book, he was working for the Chicago mob. In a third book, he was funded by the FBI. And in another, yet another book, he was employed by the Secret Service. So I thought something is very wrong here. They must be, some of it must be incorrect. But what I found out was that all four was actually true. That, and this is the whole thing that is so important to understand, that these organizations, the mob, the CIA, the FBI, and so on, they are more or less nowadays different sides of the same coin. I mean, they're so in bed with each other that it's very hard to keep them apart. And once again, this was a very scary experience to start to understand this, that the people you're supposed to trust are actually the ones that you should be aware of or be afraid of almost. So, well, the more I looked into the JFK assassination, the more intrigued and also confused I got, because it's such a complex, complicated, super multi-layered conspiracy, especially the JFK assassination. And so I started writing a book for my own sake, just to keep track of all these names and to see if I could sort this massive jigsaw puzzle out. Then the more I studied this assassination, the more interested I got in the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination, and so on. And after a while, it was almost like I could start see a pattern, a very clear pattern, like a bullet point list, that this power behind these killings were using. And I tracked this back, I think, all the way back to the Roman Empire, how they did it, how they committed a political assassination on top level, and how they were able to dupe the population into believing that it was the work of a lone crazy guy, when it was actually their brutal agenda that was being carried forward, but in total stealth mode, I mean under the radar, so that nobody would notice what had actually happened. So the more I could see that these different big assassinations were connected, the more I started looking to other assassinations as well in South America and South Africa and so on. And I started seeing that, my God, these are carried out in this very, very similar way. Not always the same on a street level, but once you see how the cover-up is done and how the whole crime is set up, there's extreme similarities. Then in 1986, the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme was shot dead in the streets of Stockholm, which was a national trauma. I mean, up until then, Sweden had been a very, very peaceful country. As far as I understood, who grew up there, I thought it was the perfect democracy. I thought it was there was no corruption whatsoever. The police were people you could trust, and the bad guys, if there were any, they were very few and mostly foreigners, and so on. But once again, this crime was also blamed on a lone crazy guy after a while. And so somewhere down the line, I started seeing that even though to start with, I thought that since the Swedish police are totally trustworthy and so on, it's only a matter of time before they get this guy and then it would be solved, you know. So I didn't really look so much into it. But then after a while, I started seeing exactly the same pattern occurring in this assassination in Sweden as had been carried out in Dili Plaza and so on so many years earlier. So it came to a point where I was actually able to predict what the Swedish investigation was going to do. And when they did that, I can't remember what it was, but found some kind of a new type of evidence that pointed towards the Patsy, something like that. I can't remember what it was that I was able to predict, but it followed exactly the same template. And when that occurred when I was able to do that. That was something that really freaked me out, because I thought, oh my God, this country that I grew up in is not the country I thought. And so I started looking at these assassinations from a much higher level than a higher perspective than I think more or less anyone else, at least in Sweden, had been looking at them. Because in Sweden to this day, there's more or less no one, as far as I know, that have been able to connect these different crimes. But so after I started seeing that they were very similar, I started backtracking and really seeing if I could track down the people that committed it, how they were connected, how they, the whole setup with escape cards, with money funding, with the surveillance, with all of these things, how they were carried out. And after 30 years, I've been able to actually find very strong proof that there was even people present in Dealey Plaza that was also present 23 years later when they took out the Swedish Prime Minister. And these people have been carrying on for all of these years, this group of assassins that were I've put so much effort into revealing and uncovering who they are and who is behind them.
Ole, isn't that dangerous for you to be uncovering assassins like this?
It's been a very scary journey, I must say, and because it came to a point, I mean, I was Mr. Nobody who was just trying to find out what was going on, but I actually managed to track down foreign secret agents in Sweden. I tracked down mercenaries, I tracked down assassins, I tracked down some of the Swedish police, right-wing police officers that was also involved in this assassination. And so it got very scary. I was quite paranoid for a long time, because I started seeing a very clear line of accidents or suicides or very strange deaths where, you know, cancer, that the person was super fine, and then 1 week later he was dead of cancer. So. And this occurred to witnesses, police officers who knew too much, people who were involved, and journalists and so on. So on an early stage, I understood that, this is, you should be careful here. Because there's only, as far as I see it, there's only two ways to protect yourself. Either you go totally under the radar and keep a super low profile, or you get the big spotlight on you in media and so on, so that will give you some kind of protection. Because if you are taken out and people are aware of you, then that just confirms whatever you are being saying.
So having identified these diverse paths for dealing with or for protecting your safety, you chose to remain under the radar, and then sometime later you moved. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, this was years down the road. I think it was the late 1980s when I moved to Stockholm. I quit my job and moved up there to be as close to these historical events as possible. And I joined a little group of private investigators, mostly elder men who was very, very sad about what had happened in Sweden and the whole development in Sweden, because it started going very, very much right wing after this assassination. Because in fact, what happened was not the deed of a lone crazy guy, but it was actually a coup d'etat in slow motion, just like my book, Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, is called. And, so what I did up there was I was trying to learn as much as possible from these different people who had spent years investigating this crime. Anyway, so I moved to Stockholm, what I did was there was a small group of private people that was called the private investigators, and they were ridiculed in the media and so on. But this was it was only a handful of people, mostly elder men, who was very, very saddened about what had happened in Sweden, because the development after the assassination was going extremely right-wing, very much right-wing. And when you look at Sweden today and compare to what Sweden was before this assassination, it's a totally different country. And so anyway, what I did, just like you say, I kept a very low profile to be able to do as much investigation as possible. And then it came to a point where I actually lost two friends of mine in this group. There were two people that died under very strange circumstances. And also I had a visit one day when I was not at home. There were people in my apartment just turning things upside down and stuff. So I got the message, and I got quite scared there for a while. So I thought the only way that I can finish this book that I was had started writing, the only way I can do that is by leaving this country. And so my sweetheart and I, we wanted to emigrate anyway, so we decided to do that there and then. And in the year 2000, we left Sweden and moved to Spain.
Well, you have a website, a book. You're not really under the radar anymore. You do lots of radio interviews.
Yeah, it came to a point in 2012. I mean, I finished the book in 2002 or 3 or something like that. And after that, it's just been lying, collecting dust, because I haven't known what to do with it. I approached quite a few publishers, but no one dared to publish it. And also, when you start seeing how these hidden networks are working with Freemasonry networks and brotherhoods and stuff, and how they are so entangled into the book publishing and media and all other areas of life, it's very, very hard and to know who to trust, because it's quite a dangerous task to find a publisher. So I left it like that for some years while I was still learning about other conspiracies and so on. And then in late 2012, it's almost exactly a year ago, I one day just got the idea that I'm going to let it out for free, put it out on the internet for free, and just get it off my shoulders so that I'm not the only one with all this knowledge, because it's been named or labeled a bomb of truth by one publisher. He said, my God, if you publish this, you're going to be sued from here to the moon. So anyway, I set up like a little network over Facebook and so on. I asked people that I knew around the globe that, please, within the next hour, I'm going to email this book out to you. And could you please spread it out to as many people you know? Just get it out there and so that it can't be stopped. So that is what I did. And I also put a little donation button on the website I had. And what I was not really prepared for was that this created like a tidal wave of interest on an international level. And I've been invited to I don't know how many radio shows now where I'm trying to reveal the agenda of this elite group, and also the different methods and tactics they're using with all these false flag operations and so on that are going on, because it's actually the same power elite, the same people that were part of taking out Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, John Lennon, 9/11, Oklahoma City. It's the same power elite behind all of them, including quite a few assassinations on an international scale as well. So these are, it's a very, very violent group. But they, even though they look very nice and decent when you see them on TV, because these are people that are in top positions around the globe. So, well, this is the journey I'm on. And
thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for putting your book out there, too. I'd like to keep going, but we're about out of time. So tell people about your website, where they can find you.
Okay, my website is www.lightonconspiracies.com. That's lightonconspiracies.com. And my book is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. Coup d'etat in slow motion. On the website, you can buy it as an ebook, but now I just signed a book deal with a company in Arizona, and hopefully it's going to be out in the end of this month, at the same time as the anniversary, or the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK. And I would also like to say, just if somebody would be interested in sponsoring me, it is immensely appreciated. It's so because it's so many years of struggle and hard research. So if anyone wants to support me, I'm so grateful. Also, I would like very much to lift this to the next level in the form of making a documentary, a top quality documentary that will show this whole, it's like 50, 60 years of these violent crimes, where a documentary could very clearly show all the connections, how they're carried out, and the agenda behind it. So if anyone out there has contacts when it comes to film people, or finances or whatever, please contact me, because that would be make a massive difference.
Well, all right. Thank you for visiting with us tonight. We'll be glad to have you back again next month. Have a good night.
You too. And anytime you need me, I'm right here.
Please welcome our new sponsor. Really Shitty Deal, healthcare for grunts. You're in good hands with Really Shitty Deal. It's filthy, lying crap. The Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. It's not universal health care. That would have been like Canada, socialism. Everybody would have been able to have health care for free and have at least one less thing to worry about. We don't need that. We need this health insurance, shitty health care insurance we cannot possibly afford. God damn it, this is America. Hope and change. God bless America and God bless the American people. This has been a word from Really Shitty Deal, health care for grunts. You're in good hands with Really Shitty Deal. It's filthy, lying crap.